The Accidental Entrepreneur is produced by Beinhacker Law and brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors. One of One Productions, the New Jersey-based podcast studio that produces and edits both audio and video podcasts. They sell equipment for the average podcaster and have even created a guesting kit exclusively for our listeners. North Authentic, the conscious hair care marketplace offering the cleanest brands from around the world. The Healthy Place, the e-commerce site with thousands of supplements to help you live a healthier life, along with natural solutions for chronic pain, stress, anxiety, depression, sleeplessness, and much, much more. And be sure to support the podcast by ordering some logo merchandise from our online store. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
And that's one of the reasons I really encourage people to start a side hustle first. If you want to start a restaurant and you're gung-ho and you're just ready to quit your job and, you know, you've watched diner drive-ins and dives every night for the past month and you know that you can do it, do a little catering gig on the side.
Start small.
One of the bigger issues that people do as a startup is that they don't really test their idea. They just pull the Band-Aid off.
That's a huge
rat
problem.
Race.
Right.
Well, their version of testing it is asking friends and family, do you think I should go start a landscaping business? Yep. Charles, it's just people out here don't want to work anymore. You start a landscaping business and I'll hire you right away.
Right.
And that's not a test market. You know, just go do it on the side. And if there's a need for it, or, you know, better yet, find out what works or doesn't work while you're working your full-time job. Well, you know, that gives you the opportunity to fail quickly and cheaply and start getting a proof of concept before you ever pull that Band-Aid off full blown.
Yeah. And that's, you know, those are small mistakes. And it's true. Yeah. I know the most successful entrepreneurs that I know that I've interviewed, that I've worked with, they test and test and test. And even when they're successful, they're testing because they know that probably what they think is working is not what it is. It's something else that people want. There's some other reason why they're buying your product. There's a reason why something's not selling that you thought was the greatest product or service that you're coming out with. They're willing to pay more for certain things than you're charging. They're willing to pay less for other things. And they're always constantly looking for that answer because they get to the point where they know that there's a good answer, but they're smart enough to know that they don't have it in themselves just to see past what's really going on in the world. So yeah, I mean, that's very good advice.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
Hey, this is Charles Alexander. I have two good things that I do. First and foremost, I am the director of the Small Business Development Center at Volunteer State College in Middle Tennessee. I help entrepreneurs start, grow, and succeed in business. And in doing that, I also started my own side hustle that is now a full-time business. I create explainer videos for busy professionals. I'm combining those two experiences to teach people now how to take their side hustle and turn it into a full-time business.
All right, Charles. So we were talking. It's nice to talk to you on a nice, I don't know if the weather's good there, but it's sunny in New Jersey and it's a mild day for December, usually freezing, and it's not today.
Sure.
So good day to connect.
Well, here in the Middle Tennessee area, we've got all the rain in the world, but it's still right around 60 degrees. So I'll take it.
Yeah. So today's something I've been looking forward to because you and I kind of do the same thing from different angles. I mean, I'm a lawyer and on the podcast, I interview people, but you know, we're kind of trying to do the same thing, help improve people's chances of success when they go into business and they're quote unquote entrepreneurs. It's a very loose word these days.
Sure.
And, you know, I think maybe there's some people that shouldn't be entrepreneurs, shouldn't be in business for themselves. But if they really want to, you know, you and I both know there are principles that they can follow and methodologies that they can use to improve their chances of success. And I'm excited to talk to you, to hear the stories that you have to share, both from the teaching side of it and all the stuff. And then we can get also into the explainer videos and how those help people and so forth. So I'll leave it to you. Maybe you want to go back a little bit about your background, how you got to where you are today.
Well, I'll make it pretty simple. I grew up in a small town, and my parents always owned a variety of businesses. So growing up, I'd worked in furniture store and mattress stores and rent-owned stores and
retail
stores. Oh, it was. And from that, I'd always knew that I would never own a business because it was tough stuff. And I could see the stress and strain that went along with it. So went on into college and got out and immediately got a job in the training field, which I did like. And then eventually landed at a company called ServPro. It's a fire and water cleanup company.
We have ServPro up here. Yep.
Of course you do. There's 2,000 franchises all over
the country.
And hopefully you never have to see one, because when they show up, that means you had a fire or you
chances
had a
chances are getting water. Higher with the change in the climate and everything.
They love climate change. It's great for them.
Good timing.
But in doing that, I was training these brand new franchise owners that were from all over the country on how to run this new business they had just purchased. And I kind of got the bug back a little bit. So from there,
you were training them on how to run the business, right? Not like how to go in and do the remediation.
Man, I was doing both.
You were doing everything. You were the guy.
Very well-rounded. Well, it was me and it's a training team. So let's say Mitch buys this brand new franchise and he flies on into little old Gallatin, Tennessee, where we are. And for 2 weeks, longer than 2 weeks, we train you. For the first week is hands-on. This is how you run a carpet cleaning machine. This is how you get spots out of the floor. This is how you run a dehumidifier.
And then
that second week, this is how you run a business, which is way more important than the first aspect of it, because you can always find somebody to come in and clean carpets, but you might not always know how to follow a business model, read a cash flow statement, know how to market your business and bring in the right team. That was the important part.
Right.
So from there, I went to later go work at a small business development center. And I would encourage any listener to contact your local small business development center, because they are all over the country, located at colleges and universities. And what we do is super simple. We provide low-cost training for small business owners and even one-on-one free coaching to help you not just start a business, but to grow and succeed and to do all the fun things.
We have them up here too. There's a lot of resources out there that people don't realize. Yeah.
So I've been doing that for almost 15 years now. So this last 5 years, I finally decided, that growing up in a business stuff, I learned a lot from it and I thought I never would want to do it. But let me take my hand in it as well, because, I want to practice what I preach a little bit. So I started my own quote unquote side hustle, which, by the way, I've been throwing around a lot and is a term that is drastically overused and I've grown to dislike, but everybody knows what it means. So I started writing my own content for other people. I was a content creator,
To make some extra money on the side or whatever.
That's
you call it moonlighting, right? We don't call it moonlighting.
Yeah. There was a great TV show and everything with Bruce Willis. So I was doing a little moonlighting, and I eventually figured out all of this writing that I was doing was great, but I figured out that videos were trumping whatever I would write. And, I became an accidental entrepreneur in that, because I was offering writing packages to CPAs. And then in one of the packages, I told them, I'll make a video out of this blog post.
So you term in terms of like hits and people coming to the website and see they're looking at the video content a lot more than they're reading the stuff.
And just pure engagement, even if you don't take the stats into it. They'll say, hey, Mitch, I saw that video you just sent me. I love it. It made a lot of sense. By the way, I need to come in and schedule an appointment.
Right. Well, it makes sense. I mean, we're visual people. For the most part. Yeah.
Well, and if you think about what percent of traffic online is video, it goes up drastically.
Look at YouTube.
Every year. Sure. Everything is video. I mean, and that spans across every generation. So from there, I figured out I need to start making these videos, and I learned how and taught myself, and I've niched down. You guys probably say niche. I'm here in Tennessee. We say niche.
Niche is good.
Niche is good. So I figured out how to do that, and I specialized primarily with a lot of financial advisors and insurance agents because that was the best fit for me for whatever reason.
Right.
And over the past year or so, I've been creating a side hustle to the side hustle of teaching people how to take a side hustle and create a full-time business, because that's exactly what I've done. That explainer video business is now eclipsed my full-time job, so to speak, my full-time income. And I've, you know, created a checklist and have started, you know, creating a bunch of materials around just that as well, because this great resignation, so to speak. A lot of people have not just been doing their own side hustle for the past several years anyways, but a lot of people are making that shift, whether they, as you stated, whether they should be or not, they're doing that.
Right.
And I, you know, I see there's a real need for teaching somebody how to pull the Band-Aid off, so to speak.
Right. Right. Well, but, you know, they want the freedom, right, of being their own boss. They want the lifestyles are changing now, especially with COVID. They don't want to be going into the city, 9-to-5 jobs and careers and pensions. It's all kind of gone. A lot of people, right? A lot of people are now on their own or solopreneurs, but they don't have the skills. I mean, they're just kind of making it up as they go along. And the reason that the success rate is so low is because, you know, there's not a lot of people that can just figure it out. You know, it's just not.
The stats, you see stats all over the place. Ones I think are probably the most accurate is where you see about 2 out of 3 small business owners don't make it in the first 5 years. And for a guy like me with kids that are ages 12, 10, and 9. Oh gosh, I'm butchering this. Hey, don't, I won't show them the
video. We won't put this on video or anything. No.
Well, they're getting birthdays. So I got three kids. Two of them have Christmas birthdays right around, which is a train wreck for anybody. Yeah, right.
My birthday was yesterday. It's, you know, I'm Jewish, but it's always Hanukkah, Christmas, whatever.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you.
So they're 12, 10, and 8. Okay. They all have entrepreneurial spirit. And, you know, in the back of my mind, great, two of these little monsters will be living with me forever if those stats hold up.
I know. By the way, Charles, that doesn't count for the people that make it but struggle for most of their life. You know,
true.
So it's probably more like 90% if you include.
Yeah, I've got a lot of, as you said, you know, the accidental entrepreneur. A lot of them are minimum wage entrepreneurs.
Yeah, they just get by. It's a cash flow business. It's a lifestyle business, and I mean, that's okay. But you got to do it. I think a lot of people during pandemic kind of realized that their business was a cash flow business. And a lifestyle business, and they weren't really making a lot of money, and they were surprised.
I see it all of the time. And I've, you know, like I said, I've been doing this since 07. So I got to go through the great, we love naming stuff. I went through the Great Recession.
Right.
And I, you know, I was coming across people left and right that just had no margin for error in their business. If you think about a piece of paper that has these margins on the side, they were running wire to wire. And when the first hiccup came along, they were, you know, they were in trouble.
Yeah. So now, do you still teach at Volunteer State College also?
I do. And teach is a loose term. It's not for college kids whatsoever. It's strictly for entrepreneurs and the.
So it's an adult education program, basically.
I'm under what they label workforce development and continuing education. It's the go to work part of the college that a lot of people doesn't know exists, but is at every college and university. They may call it something different, but that's exactly what it is. So under that umbrella, there's, you know, people that do medical training and OSHA training and all kinds of workforce training. And mine, I'm the small business guy in there. But yes, I still do that. So I've got, you know, about 3 things going right now.
So what do you see are, you know, the common things when you run into students? Let's call them students just because they're learning from you. So they're students, right? In terms of, you know, the kind of business you see, the kind of struggles that they see, see. And the ones that really stand out is, you know, that where you say, you know what, that guy's going to make it. And you know why. I was curious as to what your experience has been versus mine.
So, one, you know, you were asking about what are some of the reasons they don't make it. It's almost like a 7 deadly sins type thing. And there's probably way more than 7. But, you know, one of the very first ones, as trivial or as buzzworthy as it sounds, is just their worry or their fear or their, you know, anxiety of
not paralyzed by it.
Oh, analysis by paralysis all day long.
Yeah, right.
The first thing that people want to see me over, usually the last thing they really need to worry about, is some magic checklist, which, by the way, I'll you know, give to you, and you can make sure the listeners know how to get access to it.
Okay.
Is on exactly what all are the things I need to do to make my business quote unquote official. Or down here, for some reason, they say legal, as if I'm working with these illegal businesses.
Right. They say the same thing here, too, but it's not a right term. You're correct. It's not illegal if you don't make it official. You can be a sole proprietor. It's not the best way to operate, but it's still legal.
Well, and when I refer them to the Mitches of the world, say, man, you know, if you decide to go through all of these steps, here's how to get a license. Here's how to get an EIN. If you want to form a corporation, I highly recommend you go speak to an attorney. And they said, you know, go from wanting to be quote unquote official or legal just to wanting to cobble that part together. And I have to explain to them, don't ever, you know, don't do that. In theory, you can. It's just not your best decision.
Right. And it's harder for us on the legal side to fix it later on.
That's right. But that's one of the number one things, is just fear, worry, angst, can't move, can't think, can't. You just sit there. And then past that is just a variety of things that a lot of entrepreneurs, they lack. You know, they lack capital to get started.
Right.
Which later turns into cash flow issues, which later, you know, it comes from a lack of experience is another big one. One of them that always makes me a little crazy is a lack of planning. I'm telling you, I got three kids. So we've already been to Disney a couple of times and a year and a half ago, or right pre-pandemic, October before the pandemic, my wife decided we needed to step it up and go on a Disney cruise.
Yeah.
which is great, unless you want to send all three of your kids to college. Now there's going to be a lottery. Somebody's not going. I guess they'll just go straight into entrepreneurship.
Right.
But I enjoy it because it's something I don't have to plan. I don't have to think about it. I just show up and they herd you around like cattle, tell you what to eat, where to watch a show, and where to get
all activities planned. Right.
Yeah. Everywhere. But keep in mind, my wife, she's an entrepreneur. She's a bookkeeper, an accountant. So she has to plan anyway. So by the time we got done with this pre-planned trip that we didn't have to make any effort for, she still had a spreadsheet full of tabs and VLOOKUPs and, you know, highlighted areas and knew every place we were supposed to be every moment of every day. We had to dress up at night on this goofy thing. And one night we were Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
You had to dress up like in costume?
Yeah, no, let me back up. We didn't have to.
Right, she wanted you to, right.
Yes, I had to. She made me dress up as Grumpy for obvious reasons as I tell this. But the point of my story is that she did more planning for a cruise that needed no planning than 90% of the entrepreneurs I work with do before they start a business. They think that talking about something, praying about it, talking to you, sleeping on it, that's not planning. That's just you getting really excited. Planning is putting pen to paper and having an obvious goal and then creating the steps in order to meet it.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I think a lot of people don't realize that planning will, look, you're always going to make mistakes, right? But planning will avoid the big ones. And you can usually deal with the small ones as you're getting better at things. But I also find that people don't have the kind of skills like your wife does. They shy away and they're afraid of financial numbers. They don't know their money. So they may get money in and they blow right through it because they don't know how it should be deployed, what their actual cost of operations are, how to manage their cost and keep things down and really pay attention to things. And if they were better at spreadsheeting their business, just simple cash flow spreadsheets, this is what it costs us to operate. This is what we're going to sell our product for. This is what it costs us for the product. They would, you know, some people are operating at a loss. They don't even know it.
You were asking, how do I know when somebody's going to be successful? That's one of the first areas. When I start talking to them about any kind of numbers, they don't immediately glaze over.
Right, and if they know their numbers. Right, I agree with that.
I have, quote unquote, successful entrepreneurs that as soon as I break out a spreadsheet, I swear it's almost, they almost have a seizure. They have no concept of what's in there, and they don't want to know. They have like some kind of PTSD from an Excel spreadsheet that may have attacked them years prior, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have to look at, you know, money in, money out. So telling people, you know, one of the tips I tell them, if you're going to take a side hustle and turn it into a full-time business, is that you really need to have a personal budget first. And that's as simple as, you know, following mint.com, listening to Dave Ramsey, but just pen to paper. How much money do you have to have every month? How much is coming in and what's it being spent on? If you don't have a personal budget, adding a zero to your income, which a lot of entrepreneurs do, if you go from a $50,000 job to after a few years, I've got a $500,000 business. If you don't have personal budget management skills, that won't make it better. It will make it worse by adding a zero to it.
Right. Absolutely. And the skills are out there. I mean, you can get help to do that. You don't have to, from the business development centers to local CPAs to stuff online, right? Watching videos. You just got to learn how to take the time to do it. And a lot of people, like you said, they're so excited about their idea and developing their product and looking at their new space. And they don't even realize what the heck they're getting into. And then it's, you know, and it's too late. And I guess that's why failure is so high.
Sure.
You
know? And that's one of the reasons I really encourage people to start a side hustle first. If you want to start a restaurant and you're gung-ho and you're just ready to quit your job and, you know, you've watched diner drive-ins and dives every night for the past month and you know that you can do it, do a little catering gig on the side.
Start small.
Yeah, one of the bigger issues that people do as a startup is that they don't really test their idea. They just pull the Band-Aid off.
That's a huge rat race. Right.
Well, their version of testing it is asking friends and family, do you think I should go start a landscaping business? Yep, Charles, it's just people out here don't want to work anymore. You start a landscaping business and I'll hire you right away.
Right.
And that's not a test market, you know, just go do it on the side. And if there's a need for it, or, you know, better yet, find out what works or doesn't work while you're working your full-time job. Well, you know, that gives you the opportunity to fail quickly and cheaply and start getting a proof of concept before you ever pull that Band-Aid off full blown.
Yeah. And that's, you know, those are small mistakes, and it's true. Yeah. I know the most successful entrepreneurs that I know that I've interviewed, that I've worked with, they test and test and test. And even when they're successful, they're testing because they know that probably what they think is working is not what it is. It's something else that people want. There's some other reason why they're buying your product. There's a reason why something's not selling that you thought was the greatest product or service that you're coming out with. They're willing to pay more for certain things than you're charging. They're willing to pay less for other things. And they're always constantly looking for that answer because they get to the point where they know that there's a good answer, but they don't, but they're smart enough to know that they don't have it in themselves just to see past what's really going on in the world. So yeah, I mean, that's good advice.
It's elusive. I've had to learn how to kind of take my own medicine over the past few years as I tell people that same thing. It's harder to do. I had to hire my own business coach, by the way. Good plug for johnmichaelmorgan.com. That's my business coach. But I couldn't, you know, I couldn't practice what I preached to myself. I would literally give myself my own counseling sessions, and I just couldn't take my own advice. So I had to hire somebody else to do that. And that's good advice for anybody listening right now. But I'm constantly having to break things, start again. And when I'm talking about creating explainer videos, it's a 2D, it's a cartoon. It should be a really simple concept, but there's always little things that I'm having to change, tweak, fix, update. Different offerings, different ways to look at it, different target markets. That's the fun of it, for one thing. But that's also something you can't just rely on forever. And any entrepreneur that's listening right now that's been in business for 5, 10, 15 years, if your revenue has stagnated over the past 2, 3, 4 years, there are external factors that have perhaps caused it, whether it's the economy, technology, the way people think
changes
now.
You're not seeing.
But there's also the part that you've probably just started doing things the way you've always done it. And things that's never been an answer for anything. And it sure hasn't been over the past few years. The way you've always done it changes every 90 days.
Right. Yeah, there's no question about it. I also think I'm a very big advocate for, and the most successful guys I know use coaches. I'm a big advocate for advisors, mentors, as your business grows, an advisory board. You know, people that maybe they're in your industry, maybe they're not, they're colleagues of yours. You could be on their board, they can be on your board. But I think that you need to have that outside perspective to say, Mitch, that doesn't make any sense to us. Like, we don't even know what you're talking about, you know, and sometimes we get lost in our own industries.
And you'd be proud to know, I always tell people, before you ever get started, consider the fact that you're sitting on a four-legged stool. You're on top of it, the four legs under. One is an attorney, because you'll need somebody, if you ever decide to form an LLC or S corporation, or to sign a commercial agreement, a lease agreement, a partnership agreement. That's your person. You need a CPA to help you set up your bookkeeping to make sure it stays in order, that will do your taxes. You need insurance, so get a good insurance broker. What you need for, you know, your BOP, your E&O may not, your home life auto guy may be willing to write you the policy, but he might not know all of the nuances. And then talk to a banker. Even if you never plan on borrowing money, bankers, especially small business bankers, they're amateur coaches, whether they know it or not, because of all the different dealings they get helping people get lines of credit or get a commercial loan.
Yeah. Now, the best ones I've seen have been more like they would, you know, explain to you what your business needs to look like to be bankable, to borrow money if you want to raise capital, whatever. And I think a lot of business owners, do you think that a lot of business owners on the small side, entrepreneurs, startups, whatever, they go in with the mindset, hey, I'd like to sell this someday? Or you think they just kind of one day they're like, hey, I can sell my business, and it's totally not ready for it?
The first thing I always do is ask somebody what their goals are. And 98% of them don't have a goal. Their goal is, you know, Charles, I just
go to work,
make
tomorrow
as much money as we can and help people and frou-frou this. Yeah, which is great. But that's what I tell them. So like, well, let's pretend we're going to sell it one day, because one day this business won't be here. So you're going to whatever it is, you're going to work until the day you die, or you plan on transferring it, selling it, whatever. Let's start thinking about that right now on the front end. How much money do you need to make? How many employees do you need? What needs to be the business structure? Because great, great case in point. I have had a client that I started with, oh, I bet it was 12 years ago. Great business. To keep it confidential, I won't give you a ton of the details, but has a real good niche. And, you know, he's one of the very few folks in our area that does what he does, hired people, has vehicles, but got to a point where he, you know, after about 12 years, he said, that was good. I want to sell it now.
Yeah.
And he can sell it, but he can't sell it for nearly of what he thought. And it took me and a business broker to get on the phone with him and really explain how numbers work, because somebody has to borrow money to come and buy his business. Not everybody's just walking around with several hundred thousand dollars in their pocket.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a fun conversation, because the net has to be a certain dollar amount for the bank to loan somebody that money. And the net wasn't there like he thought it was.
And he's trying to keep his taxes down, and he's trying to minimize his taxable income. And
well, sure. And that was this business could make a whole lot more. I said, yeah, but it hasn't.
Right. They don't count that.
Yeah. So if it could make a lot more, or what are you going to explain to a bank? I just voluntarily didn't make as much money as I could.
Right. No, that doesn't work.
So-and-so
or I take
changes.
It out in cash and I don't show the income. That doesn't count either. It's got to be on the books.
I've got a totally separate one right now. I have a client that's wanting to buy an existing business. The existing business is asking way too much. And she wants to know if she can get a loan. I said, no, the loan, you know, the business nets $25,000 a year. They're not going to loan you, close to whatever it was. I think it was like 500 grand. I said, why would they loan you 500 grand? Well, but they make a lot more money. I just know they do. So they have money that's off the books. I mean,
that doesn't count either.
The bank doesn't count tax fraud as it's income.
Exactly.
So yeah, that either way. But yes, I have a dozen stories that we could ruin the rest of the podcast with of people that want to sell their business but never set it up to do so.
You did put in your bio though, you have interesting stories when you speak. So what do you want to throw at me? You got some funny stories of different businesses? Taught a lot of students, a lot of business owners.
I have, I've got a lot of what you do and what you don't do type of thing. I got a not so great stories. One of the clients I had years ago that decided he wanted to start a business because he was into coffee. So he wanted to open a coffee shop, which is fine.
Okay.
But then he wanted to match it up with pizza.
Coffee and pizza?
Yeah. And he did that. I never tell anybody if they should or shouldn't start a business. I always just kind of lay out the facts for him. And he was convinced that it was going to work. So, you know, in order to keep the hours at a sane level, he kind of opened late in the morning, which ruined it for coffee, and closed early in the evening, which ruined it for pizza. and it was about a 2 or 3 month go of it. And it doesn't exist anymore. It got good reviews for the coffee and the pizza because he invested a ton of money to make it where, you know, people would really be excited about it, but it didn't pan out kind of.
Because when you wanted coffee, he was closed. And then when the other guy wanted pizza, he was closed then too.
Yeah.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Looking to get into podcasting? Maybe to market your business for your own enjoyment or because you have a message you want to get out there. One of One Productions is a New Jersey-based studio just over the George Washington Bridge that caters to the booming business of podcasting. They offer a comfortable atmosphere using the latest technology available to record your podcast. And they are a full-service media company offering both audio and video production services, creating both audio and video podcasts, as well as video shorts for business and personal use. Professional audio equipment packages are available through their website for all budgets. And be sure to check out their podcast guesting kit, created specially for our listeners. Care for your health. Care for the planet and look flippin' great doing it. North Authentic is a conscious hair care marketplace offering the cleanest brands from around the world. Their pro stylists curate only the most fabulous non-toxic hair products with better-for-you shampoos, serums, masks, and more that actually give you gorgeous hair without hurting your health or the planet. Hey, you've only got one life, one planet, and one glorious mane. Might as well treat them all as best you can, right? Try a 100% clean hair care routine prescribed just for you using their link in the show notes. If you don't see a big, beautiful difference in how your hair looks and feels, you can tell them they're crazy. Do you battle chronic pain, stress, anxiety, or depression? Well, if you take any supplements or you're interested in natural alternatives, you need to know about findyourhealthyplace.com. Find Your Healthy Place has thousands of supplements to help you live a better quality of life, as well as natural solutions for chronic pain, stress, anxiety, depression, sleeplessness, and much, much more. Need guidance? Use their live chat feature and talk to a wellness consultant right on their website. And be sure to use our coupon code TAEPODCAST for all your purchases to get the best prices at findyourhealthyplace.com. Follow their links in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
I've had a fair amount of business owners who come to me later on, 4 or 6 months into the deal, and they're like, I got to close up. What do you mean? You just told me you just started.
Yeah.
They don't have a business plan.
No.
They didn't do market research in the wrong location. They didn't plan on whatever. They didn't price the product. They couldn't tell me why how they priced the product. They got some consultant to tell them. Yeah. I don't know.
Years ago, one of the very first clients I got was a couple, and they had just gotten married.
Right.
They both just gotten divorced, got money, and then they just got married and decided they were going to open a cigar parlor, which is great. And they got a physical location, spent up. Let me back up. They came to me wanting to go get.
Wait, these are two people that got divorced. Then they were together, but they're just business partners.
Sorry, they got married.
They got married after they both got divorced.
The only reason I even point out they both got a divorce, they both got money out of their divorces.
Ah, got it. Okay.
So they pulled it all together and opened a physical location of a cigar parlor. And I'm not doing a very good job at keeping the anonymity here, so we'll just hope they don't listen to this podcast. But okay, bless their hearts.
Up by me, we don't know them, so.
Yeah, but they were wanting to borrow money. So what do you want to borrow money for? Well, he spent all of our money, everything that we own into this, and it was top, everything was top of the line, man. The humidor, the indoor golf range, it was fantastic. Unfortunately, they had no money for inventory.
Right, working capital, nothing.
Working capital. And that was the one that worried me more than the inventory. I said, look, if you don't hit break even month one, which nobody does, this isn't, I mean, I don't know, have a nice way to tell you. I'll just spend a bunch of money. I don't know, we'll be okay. So 3 months later,
that shut down, gone.
It was terrible.
Right. Because like you said, no budgeting.
I don't want to scare all your listeners off. Look, I have a ton.
A lot of my listeners have suffered through similar things.
Yeah. But there's a lot of success stories, you know, they're just not as much fun to talk about, I suppose.
Well, but they're not as full of lessons, right? I mean, the ones that unfortunately that fail or struggle teach other people things that they shouldn't do or watch out for or learn, so that's just the story of life. I mean, the people I've had on the podcast who are successful have stories of not being successful.
Right.
Because that's how they learned. They learned from somebody else, or they failed in this business, or they worked for somebody who failed or whatever. And they failed their way to success. That is that's a truism. You fail your way to success. You don't succeed your way. Do you succeed your way to failure? No, that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of things you're talking about are principles that are consistent with the people that I see and work with, and things that they don't do and do.
So one of the things, if your listeners get nothing else out of this, one of the most important areas that I see that good entrepreneurs that succeed do really well in, and this is going to sound academic, but it's not, I promise you, is about being able to focus for long periods of a time without getting distracted by smaller priorities. And that's harder to do than ever. I have people that come in that are working 18-hour days that are, they're tired. Let me back up. Good story here. I had two doctors that came to see me pre-pandemic. They both own their own practices. So the first one wanted to come in. She was opening a second location, well-known in town, has her act together. Second one, he wasn't doing as well and just needed to figure out, you know, some quote unquote basic stuff. So she came in the successful one first thing that morning, 10 minutes early. We're talking about opening her second location. She doesn't need any counseling. I'm learning from her. I'm taking notes. She's got the second location set up and ready. She's got people hired. They're getting trained. So before she left, you know, I kind of started getting a little nosy, you know, asking her how she structures her day and what she thinks about, what she reads. So common sense stuff. She gets up before anybody else in her house does. She reads, prays, meditates, and gets focused. She has a plan for that day. And she does this every day. Doesn't always go the way she envisions, but she does it every single day. Second entrepreneur, doctor, comes in. He's not 10 minutes early, but he's about 30 minutes late. And brother, he comes in, he's on the phone and
right all over the place.
Oh my gosh. I was exhausted. You know, after she left that 1 hour, I felt like I could do anything. He left, I was exhausted. He was on the phone the whole time. He was texting, calling, emailing. He would start to ask me a question and then he would interrupt himself with the next thought that popped into his mind.
Little ADHD, huh?
I mean, and he's like a lot of different entrepreneurs. They're just putting out fires all day long. So I happened to ask him before he left, you know, Doug, we'll call him Doug. That's not his name. Thank God.
Okay, good.
Hey man, how do you set up your morning to be successful? And he laughed at me and I swear he almost reached out and patted me on the head. But essentially he just, you know, wakes up as soon as he can.
He wings it.
He picks up his phone first thing in the morning and scrolls through, you know, doom scrolls. And then every minute of every day is just a fires. And his last words, well, thanks anyways. That was okay. Whatever. And he left. So she's second location. She's killing it. He's same spot that he's always been. So get narrowly focused on the one or three things that you as an entrepreneur can do that really nobody else can do to make your business hum. If you've ever, I don't know if you guys are readers, but read The One Thing. It's a fantastic book.
Yeah, that's Keller Williams' book, right?
That's Eric right, 100%.
I had the CEO of The One Thing on the show. Jeff, what's Jeff's last name? He's going to kill me that I don't remember his last name, but he's on the show. Yeah, that's a great book.
Hey, edit it in later. Yeah. But after you get done listening to this podcast, go find that one. I don't know what number it is, but I'm sure it's great because the concept is there's a few things that you need to be working on solely as the business owner. Everything else can either be outsourced, delegated, automated, or just don't do it.
Right. Well, you know, the it's funny because those two doctors are the epitome of every person that I meet. The one that's the planner and organizer on top of things, they will always be successful, avoiding problems, figuring things out, because there's always I guess there's no problems when you're dead. But besides that, it's a sign of life. The other guy will always struggle and half the time won't even know that he's struggling, you know, because he's just too busy. It's just and people learn to live in that chaos. And it's not a formula for success. It's not
a formula for being happy. It's rough.
Well, right. I mean, look, I find some people get so lost in the chaos. They think that is happiness. Like that's what they get used to that.
Right.
Sure. You just get, you know, living that way. And you look at it like, how can you live this way? And he's like, what do you mean? Doesn't everyone live this way? And you're like, no, that is not how people live.
Unfortunately, more than not, the analogy I've used, as inappropriate as it may be, is why you have guys that are repeat offenders. Why they'll go back to jail over and over and over because they're comfortable there and they know how the system works. So they just keep doing the wrong things the wrong way because I think that's normal.
Yeah, you're right. People get comfortable in the way that they're handling it, is their business or their work or, you know, whatever it is. But those are all good, you know, good pieces of advice. So what kind of business? I know you mentioned some professionals, doctors, whatever.
Sure.
Do you remember some interesting businesses that you were helping people work on and create and coach them through?
So a lot of the businesses I work with could be anywhere from, it could be a lot of different things, but the most common are solopreneurs that are between a solopreneur and somebody's got 20 or so employees. A lot of them are service-based.
Yeah.
Sticking with this theme of being focused, one of my best clients is a pest control company.
Mm-hmm.
And one year they decided that they really needed to focus in on their quote unquote one thing. We weren't calling it that at the time, but that's exactly what it was. And they had several goals in mind. They wanted to decrease employee turnover and increase, customer retention and accounts receivable to go down. So what they ended up deciding on was that, so it's a pest control company. If they're coming to Mitch's house here, they have to spray the outside and the inside for all the little critters. Well, I don't know what percentage of time it was. It was higher than it should have been. If people weren't at home when they were supposed to be, they would have to go out and reservice. This is causing problems.
Because they could only spray outside. Can't spray inside.
That's right. And the customers, you didn't spray the inside. Well, you weren't home. And that has a variety of different issues. So what they decided was to get really aggressive with that and increase customer communication tenfold. So they got They would send you a text. They would send you a postcard. They would send you an email. And even with that, they wouldn't just say, we're coming. They'd say, Charles is coming. Here's a few fun facts about Charles. He's a big fan of UT football, has three kids, and his pet peeves are rainy days and people that don't smile. And there'd be my smiley face. So more than not, they were at home then.
Yeah.
And they also felt like they knew the technician. And they thought, well, while you're here, let me go ahead and pay you. So by that one thing, that one simple thing that they were really successful with, they managed to, get better client retention. They managed to get the accounts receivable to go down. They got more employee engagement and got lower employee turnover. They just got all these fun things from really doing that one thing really well.
Yeah. What do they call that? That Japanese, term. I read a book about it too. Kaizen. It's about, one little change. Sure. Like that makes a huge difference. And they gave all these
butterflies
examples.
Butterfly effect, almost.
Correct. Exactly. And usually it's not like, rarely do people like invent things or do something that's like earth shattering. Usually
right. It's
taking some concept a little bit different or doing it very well. Like you said, it might be the same thing as everyone else does, but your customer service is so good. Your communication is so good. The way you run your business is so good that you clean up and the other people are just scratching their heads going, I don't know why they go to that restaurant all the time. They don't come here. You don't welcome.
Using that example, I always tell people you need to have a niche.
Right.
If you're all things to all people, you'll be nothing to nobody, so to speak. So I always use pizza as an example right there. There are three types of niches. The first two are pretty rare, but those are the ones that everybody thinks they have is, they think they have something that has just been neglected by the market to date. No one else does.
It's very rare.
The other one is like the unlimited demand, the field of dreams theory.
Right.
If you build it, they will come. Also not very true. The one is just really simple, continued innovation. You're going to do something a little more unique than everybody else. So the example I use, you guys have Little Caesars in your part of the world?
Yep.
So when you think of Little Caesars back in the 1990s, do you remember their slogan?
Oh, they're pizza, pizza. They had the funniest commercials.
Never fails. They gave you two pizzas, whether you wanted them or not. So even though it was a great slogan, must not have been a great business model because about the 2000 era, they kind of went away.
Yeah.
And they reinvented themselves. And now when you think of them, it's $5 hot and ready.
Right.
And is it the best pizza you've ever eaten?
I don't think that really matters that much. Domino's isn't the best pizza you've ever eaten, but
I've got a house full of Domino's right now for a little kid's birthday party.
It's easy with the background. Ordering's easier and all that kind of stuff. I think it's funny because Little Caesars had those commercials back in the 90s that were very funny and you would remember them, but what do I need two pizzas for?
You needed one for $5 hot and ready. So your listeners, I'm telling you guys, you don't need to go bottom barrel pricing like they do, but the idea that I always have to have the best product and the best this and the best that.
No.
You need to have a happy customer willing to pay, but do something unique that fits your skill set that they actually want. They're not getting somewhere. Be that person. I mean, you can have a limited number of clients that you have. A lot of my clients, especially the solopreneurs, kind of follow the 1,000 customer theory. You always hear Seth Godin repeating it. I think Kevin... I can't remember his name, created the concept, but I need 1,000 raving fans and that's it. If I can get them to give me $100-$200 each and make that 1,000 really happy, I'll make a great living.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I think Little Caesars might be a good example of lack of market research. They didn't test and check, right? Because they probably could have figured it out that wasn't.
I bet they asked their aunt and uncle. You think everybody will love two pizzas? Right. Everybody will love two pizzas. Little, go do it.
The ironic thing, they probably hired a very expensive advertising agency. They came up with this big campaign and pitched it to them, told them it was to be the best thing, and it was wrong. It was a waste, waste of their money. Yeah, absolutely. There was something I was going to ask you, though. You just said about, what was I going to ask you? You just said something. I don't remember, but I find that when it comes to I know what I was going to say. When it comes to restaurants, retail or whatever, it's like you said, you don't have to, nobody's going to invent a new pizza. Could you make a new flavor? Sure. Your pizza, it's dough and sauce and cheese and you throw some toppings on it and, some of them better than others. Yeah. But you can't compete on price your entire life. You can't compete on on your product all the time, but you can compete on how you, the customer experience, right? The experience that they have 100%. When they come. Yeah. And I think a lot of them they don't appreciate that.
Well, think about Starbucks. Starbucks, there's one on every corner. They do have good coffee, but it's not necessarily anything.
It's all service though, right?
It's just a different experience. Down here, Chick-fil-A is just...
You can't get in them here. Hours online to get this chicken. It's chicken. It's not that fancy.
But everybody loves it just because of the experience, because they're smiling, they're happy to see you, and they create... Yeah. They have a process to it.
Yeah.
That's right. And it's, so that's one of the big issues I have with a lot of my clients, that they pride themselves on customer service, but they're just using the term customer service. What they mean is that I answer the phone when somebody calls and I smile, which is great, but that's the bare bones basic of what everybody does. Create an experience that they won't get somewhere else. It doesn't mean you have to give the farm away or lower the price, but make somebody feel appreciated. And right now, more than ever, that is an easy niche that a lot of people are not filling.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny, up in this area, people think like Chick-fil-A is like a startup new franchise. And I'm like, it's more than 50 years old, just like Popeyes. It goes back.
Yeah. I mean, right here in the buckle of the Bible Belt, I can promise you people love some Chick-fil-A.
Yeah. It's funny because up here, people go to Chick-fil-A on Sundays and then they realize, oh, damn, it's closed.
You know, that's right. What's wrong with them?
Yeah. But it's a good example. So I think people, if they really took it to heart, like how can I, you know, really service my customer? How can I stay in front of them, stay top of mind, be more attentive, not just different, but just more attentive to what it is that they need and want and what their experience is, and listen to my customers and ask my customers, their chances of success, I think, would be much higher.
Always stay in constant communication. So one thing for a lot of your listeners, use your email marketing. It is not dead by any stretch of the imagination. There are multiple times more email accounts than there are Facebook and Twitter combined. And nobody can really change the algorithm, although Apple's trying to, bless their hearts, on how email marketing works. But it is the simplest and easiest way. If you send out something genuine once a week, you'll get a loyal following, and you'll be able to ask people honestly what they like, what they don't like, or find out ahead of time what you know works well for them.
Yeah,
simple I stole from another one of my clients a while back was a simple one question survey. Send out a one question survey to your clientele quarterly of one thing that you're really trying to get an answer to, and just ask them. You don't even have to incentivize them. Just create a Google form.
Do it. Yeah.
Of course they will. People love to give you some feedback, and they will. Yeah. And it's just an overlooked thing. If you have a question about a product you want to put out there, a price structure, or the, you know, whatever it is that they would like that you're not currently doing, just ask them.
Yeah, definitely. Building an email list is a big thing. It's a big part of the success of the podcast, you know, and staying in touch with people. It's funny because, and I've said this before, I've been in, you know, restaurants, locally, let's say a small restaurant, and they always have like a fishbowl, right? Where you can put your business card in. Let's say it's business lunch and you can win a business lunch. So I always say to a colleague I'm with, put your business card in there. I bet you never hear from these people. And they're like, what do you mean? Well, most, you know, only one person wins the lunch. They don't do anything with all these people that raise their hand and say, hey, I'm at your restaurant.
Yeah.
They could market to them and say, hey, here's a 20% off coupon. Thanks for coming by, whatever. And add a business 6 months.
Yeah, scan them in and send them a weekly, this is what's on the menu.
Right, exactly. People are like, well, they don't want to hear from me that often. Okay, well, they can unsubscribe. They're allowed to do that. Yeah. And a lot of times I don't read the newsletters from all of my colleagues, but I remember that you're out there. I see the email itself. Oh, Johnny sent me an email. Oh, yeah, he's still in business, you know.
Well, that's one of the reasons I still have a growing business with Explainer Videos is I've taught these financial advisors and insurance agents. When they say, well, people don't want to hear from me that much. Well, they don't want to hear from the rest of them because they send out really boring things that nobody would want to read that they didn't even create. You'll send them a 90-second video that explains something to them in a fun and animated way. You'll be the only one doing it, and they will remember you, and they'll come in, and they'll bring more business, and it's a layup.
Yeah, right. And by the way, the argument that they don't want to hear from me that often is a bad argument because they're hearing from other people that often. So then not only are you getting drowned out, but they're not hearing from you. So then they're thinking, oh, well, it must be Bob who's still in the financial business. Yeah. Mike, I don't hear from him anymore. I guess he left the business. They think you're going to call, and you're not going to call.
That's the number one people that that's the number one reason that somebody will leave a retaining type of business. If you're on retainer or renewal or subscription, if they don't hear from you enough, that's where the apathy kicks in. It's not necessarily that you are doing something wrong.
Right.
So for any of you that are doing anything from landscaping and pest control, or attorneys that are on retainer, or CPAs that have regular clients, or you're a consultant or graphic designer or web guy, stay in constant contact with them. Not a plug for constant contact.
I like MailChimp anyway. So,
well, I love ActiveCampaign, but
listen, there you go. ActiveCampaign's a good one too. Yeah.
Stay in front of them with something that you created. If you don't know what to create, again, go back to that one question survey. They'll tell you what they don't know. And you don't have to be a content expert, but just stay active and in front of them.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, look, in the legal profession, for the ones that I know that are solopreneurs and they're automate their business and they're into technology. I mean, I sent out a Google letter just recently because I've been meaning to do that for a long time.
Yeah.
So whenever there's a case that's closed, it goes into a new pipeline. That pipeline transfers the email over to my mailing list and I'd send them out. I got the letter from a colleague of mine. I said, well, what do you do? And she sent me the letter and I changed a little bit to fit my practice.
Yeah.
People love to give me, I offer them anything, not even allowed to ethically.
Sure.
Hey, can you give me a review? I've had some people say, hey, well, that's great. Can you give me a review? Sure. And they sent me the link and because I did business with them. So yeah, it's just a question of putting the systems in place to do these things that make, because I try to explain that to business owners, it doesn't have to be done by hand every day. You could put things in place that'll automate the service that you're providing so you don't have to worry about it. Especially nowadays, much easier to be a solopreneur with the technology that's available, virtual services, all that.
And that's one of the things I always tell people. I've grown this single guy explainer video business where I was writing the script and creating the video and doing all of the follow-up. I'm still a solopreneur. I've got a team of people around me.
They're virtual.
All of them. I've got a virtual assistant in the Philippines. I've got people all over the world that create my videos. I have a script writer in South Carolina. I've got voiceover artists. I don't even know where they're located. They're in the U.S. somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah. No, people don't realize that through Upwork and Fiverr and all these different websites, you can find people that want to help you at a very, very reasonable price, you know?
Let's
talk about, because I know we've been on now for 40 or 50 minutes.
Sure.
Let's talk about the explainer videos and how you kind of started that business and what it is and how people can find out more information about it. But let's talk about, what it is and what its services. Because you mentioned financial services and insurance people. I know, because I grew up in that business from my dad, that there are compliance issues with every time you want to scratch your nose
in that
business.
Right. That's 100% right.
Yeah.
So looking at what I do, and for those of you that don't know, an explainer video is just what it sounds like. It's a short video that explains something step by step to you. I specialize in making them animated cartoons, so they're fun, easy to watch. And I always make them 90 seconds because that is our sweet spot in terms of an introductory video. Anything less than a minute, kind of hard to get your message across, and anything longer than 2 minutes, Mitch almost has to be Oscar nominated worthy in order to hold somebody's attention anymore. So that 90 seconds is what I tell people, put that. And it's not just for those two, niches. I actually just did one for an attorney very recently. And the idea is that if you have to explain to somebody what you do and it takes you, so here's the thing. And then 8 minutes later, you're still in the explanation. You probably need an explainer video to narrow it down very quickly, make it story-based where the viewer kind of sees themselves in that hero's journey, so to speak, where, I've got Mitch. Mitch has a lot of plates he's spinning and nobody really understands what he does. And then, he's got this explainer video and it teaches them all about it. And now he's happy and he wants to buy a video. You asked how do folks find me? If you go to yourcharlesalexander.com, very original, I know, you'll find information for those explainer videos. They're both custom created, and I also have some plug and play videos that are out there as well that people can use to set themselves apart and explain exactly why they are different. And also on that same website, I've got a checklist for people that want to take a side hustle and make it into a full-time business, or even people that are just wanting to start a business. There's a checklist that they can get that I've spent years creating and boiling and down. There's a million and one things that could be on the checklist, but I made it just a two-pager, so it would be the most important things that you would need.
So they can go to your website. We'll put a link in the show notes
right,
to learn about the explainer videos, see some examples, and also download the checklist.
100%.
Okay, great. Well, I appreciate that very much. Well, Charles, I don't know if you have any last-minute parting words or thoughts or suggestions. But okay, so give me your last words, and I thank you for joining me today and sharing all your knowledge.
All right. Any last words? I think not to continue to come back to the same things, but in terms of taking that side hustle and turning it into a full-time business or even just a startup period, don't overanalyze or over worry with the getting it official part. Get started on the side. Throw several things against the wall and see what sticks, knowing that more than not, it won't. But as long as you have that opportunity to kind of get started there, you can grow that side hustle to a point where you can get a proof of concept. Get that proof of concept.
Right, where you learn.
That's it. And then then you can decide if you want to scale or do this thing full time. Don't quit your day job yet without doing that first.
And plan, right?
Please.
I'm a big one on journaling. If you have a long day and you're tired, write things down. Make notes. Put it on your phone. Write it down. Whatever.
Yeah. I started journaling 2 years ago, and it has made the entire difference in my life. So I get up first thing in the morning, just like Mandy, the doctor, does before anybody else in this household. I sit on the back porch and just, and I don't even have a constructive or brilliant way to do it. If somebody ever checks this thing, they'll think either I psychotic or they're reading a
just random stream of consciousness, right?
Just get all of this stuff out of your head. Yeah. I can tell you in that period of time from journaling alone, I fully believe that it's helped me to get in the best fitness level that I've been in for several years. My revenue from the explainer video has doubled in that time. And just the way I talk and interact with my family has changed because I can write it all down and see clearly that maybe it's not all them. Maybe I'm part of the issue. And now that I see that, I can reflect on that. There's your parting words, Mitch. Not that other stuff. Journal, folks. It's great for entrepreneurship.
Yeah. Well, people rely too much on their memory. They think that's why they don't absolutely. Do things in writing. They don't have contracts with their customers and their employees and their partners.
Right.
And it screws things up. So that's why you should journal and write things down.
100%.
All right, Charles, I can't thank you enough. I appreciate you joining me today. And let's stay in touch and keep sharing the good word with the world.
Good deal, Mitch. Thank you for having me.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.